blowing the
breeze. Yeah, y'all left me up here all by myself. All by myself.
Don't worry, Barry. We got your back, Barry.
Please. Thanks, everybody, for coming this morning. Hope the snow wasn't too problematic for everyone. I'm going to call things to order in a moment. The New York State Racing Paramutual Wagering and Breeding Law provides that the Thoroughbred Breeding and Development Fund Corporation shall consist of 11 members appointed by the governor. 6 members are necessary to establish a quorum and undertake action. This present meeting of the fund is now called to order. Council, will you call the roll, please?
Sure. Okay. Jeff Nizzo?
Here.
Dr. Wilmot?
Here.
Howard Nolan?
Here.
Bill McMahon?
Here.
John Graziano?
Here.
Jim Bays?
Here.
Acting by proxy?
I'm the acting commissioner.
He's the acting commissioner.
Okay. John Crotty?
Here.
John Plenta?
Here.
And
Todd Snyder.
Yes, that's me. Thank you. Nice to meet you all.
My apologies.
Ed Kelly.
And Ed Kelly is not here. I think he had a difficult situation last night.
Yeah, he has a problem at home, and he apologizes for not being able to make the meeting.
Okay. Will council please have the record reflect that the quorum of qualified members are present, thus enabling us to transact business? There was a prior meeting, when was this, in September?
Yes.
Okay. And we need to do approval of those minutes. Minutes of the fund meeting conducted on September 10th, 2013 have been provided to all members in advance. Is everybody here had an opportunity to at least familiarize themselves with the minutes of the last meeting? At this time, I'd like to ask the members if there are any edits, corrections, or amendments to those minutes?
Yes.
No suggestions?
Hey, Mr. Chairman?
At all?
Mr. Chairman?
Yes, sir.
I think it would make sense for the three of us down here to abstain, speaking for myself, but we weren't at the last meeting.
Very good. Do we have a motion for the acceptance of the minutes?
So moved.
Second?
Second.
Thank you. Please have the record
reflect. So, Mr. Chairman, the record will reflect that Mr. Paclemba, Mr. Snyder, and Mr. Crotty all abstained, yes?
That the 4 Gaming Commission members are abstaining from the vote.
Excellent. Thank you.
Next up is a discussion of year-to-date financial reports. Ms. Egan, would you walk us through the financial documents? And you're going to have somebody to support to help you do that, please? Thank you.
Yes, Christine Frucci came on board in 2011 to help catch the office up with some business. And then when Mr. DeMarco, our CFO, left in May 2nd of 2012, she found herself having to work full-time for a while to help us through the crisis. But financially, right now, the bottom line is that the revenue from the VLTs has been fantastic this year. Horse racing handle is down on track at a steeper rate than it is down through off-site betting, because more and more people are betting from laptops and their iPhones and their iPads. And of course, we don't get any the share of that. We get a share of the on-track handle. And in trust state, meaning within the state, from OTVs and other tracks. So our revenue is in very good health, largely, mainly because of the VLTs. I'll have Christine go into the details.
Okay.
Tell us where we are right now.
Okay, you should have a 10-page document, which is an Excel workbook, and you should have a 4-page Word document. On page 1 of the 10-page Excel workbook, I'd like to look at the profit and loss at a high level. You'll see that the net income as of November 13 is a net loss.
Can everybody in New York hear us?
It would be good if you could speak up a little bit, yes.
We're getting closer to the instrument there.
We have a net loss as of November of 95,000. However, that compares favorably to this time last year when the loss was 445,000. So just at a high level, if you were to look at revenue of 17.9 million, that is 2.6 million higher than last year. The purse enrichment has been reduced by 381,000, so that's about 400,000 to explain the increase of 349,000, so we have 3 million to the good. That's offset by an increase in awards of 2.4 million. And also an increase in administrative and promotional of about 200,000. So when you take the 3 million increases less the 2.6 million decreases, you have about the 400,000 that we're showing as a favorable difference from this year to last year. So I will go into more detail, but at a high level, does anybody have any questions?
I do, actually. How are you not flat every year? How do you have a deficit?
Well, in this particular year, we have higher revenue, but also higher awards. And you'll see that the revenue is increasing at 16.7%, but the awards are increasing at 19%.
But then how did that happen? It seems like a pretty basic formula to me. You take money in through a systematic formula, and then you disperse it.
That's right. Now, because the rates are the same between 2012 and 2013, meaning that the breeders, stallions, and owners are getting the same percentage as they did in 2012, this is a pure volume change. The price, the rates are the same, so it has to do with the number of races. And we.
No, that still doesn't work because you have a finite amount of cash you take in. It should be roughly exactly equal to the amount of cash that goes out. Am I missing something?
Well, yes. I think what you're missing here is that the New York Reds have been performing much better last year and this year, especially in open company races. It means we're breeding a better racehorse, which is our mission, to improve the quality of thoroughbreds here. So instead of just running in restricted company, for example, they're running in open company races where their owners are eligible for owner awards.
I think his question is,
it's nothing to do with the horses at all.
The control of the awards, because that's what's going out, correct?
Correct.
So what?
Yeah.
And for us, this is some of us are new to this. Mm-hmm. What is the dynamic around the process for awards?
Well, let me see if I can.
Is that your issue?
Sure.
Yeah. Okay.
Let me see if I can, at a high level, start the conversation, and then others who are breeders that know this intimately can. And correct me when I mess it up.
For me, don't go too high. The crayon version is fine for me. One-on-one, you know?
There are two basic kinds of races that the breeding fund pays money out on. One is an open company race, and the other is a New York restricted race, restricted to New York breeds only. Awards are generally payable. Breeders' awards, owners' awards, the stallion awards are generally payable in open company races only. Okay, in open company races, a New York bred may fare well or may fare poorly in that race, and so whether or not an award is actually going to be earned is a function of how well the New York bred is doing in those open company races, and so that's why every year there will be some fluctuation between how much the awards what level the awards are being paid out in a restricted race. Those are races where purse enrichment is paid, and the fund has discretion as to how much money to pay out in purse enrichment to the two tracks. But you know, so it's not completely formulaic. It is not a case where the board can project, you know, in January of each year, how much is going to, you know, what the success rate is going to be of the New York bred horses, and therefore always stay, you know, perfectly in line with the revenue that's coming in and the awards that are being paid out. I'm sure others can help on that explanation, but I think that's generally.
Maybe if I just follow up, it's Todd Snyder. If I could follow up with a couple of questions, it would probably help us get up the curve very quickly. Can you hear me?
Yes.
Okay, good. Are the awards that you give out to a successful New York bred horse in an open company race fixed by dollar amount?
No. And this is
okay. So then, if they're not fixed by dollar amount, from our perspective, knowing nothing, what we're assuming is that you make an estimate of what your revenues might be for any given year, and we can talk about whether they need to be revised periodically or not, but an estimate is made, and an estimate of your operating expenses is probably also doable. And as a result, there is a net available for distribution from your estimates. And then our assumption is that your goal is to hand out that amount of money and not a dollar more. Is that a fair statement?
100% fair, yes.
I guess maybe the question is, do we have a process in place that is mechanically and adequately designed to achieve that end? And the numbers that were just read to us suggest that the answer is no. Is that also fair?
This is Joe McMahon. I'm a member of the fund here. The difference, what you're talking about, you're saying that, well, you're seeing this $445,000 loss, or 444, I guess, is what you're seeing. In actuality, the fund pays these awards.
I'm sorry, I'm seeing $95,000 loss
last year. I'm sorry, I'm looking at the wrong column for a minute there. But anyway, the fund pays these awards. They pay a percentage. They set that percentage at the beginning of every year.
Wait, a percentage of what?
A percentage of what the horse earns in a given race. So a New York sired, I'll just run through that quickly for you. A New York sired New York bred earns a 30% award in any race that it wins. A New York sired New York bred who is second or third earns a 15% award of whatever the purse is.
Which means it goes up and down.
So, Joe, what you're saying is that it is actually dollar denominated. If a New York bred, New York sired horse wins a race, he earns what will be a fixed amount. It's 30% of the purse.
That's right.
It's a dollar denominated amount.
That's right. That's true. And the purse levels change. All races have different values. So depending on what grade of race, what level of race, that's where the award, where we can't really predict how much we're going to pay out. Now, to that end, the fund instituted over 20 years ago, we instituted a program where we hold back 10% from what a breeder earns of all his races through the year. When we pay these out quarterly, we hold back 10%.
Six quarters.
So we hold back a percentage of what they're earned. And that's the money that we use to equalize this thing at the end of the year so that we don't have a shortfall. You follow what I'm saying?
I do, but Joe, if I understand you correctly, let's use that 30% number. Is that 30% set by statute?
No,
it's set by the fund board, and it's set by virtue of how much money we anticipate having in the coming year. The purpose
if the 10% holdback turns out to be inadequate, then it turns out that in some pro rata fashion, everybody actually gets less than the 30% that would have been earned otherwise.
That's true.
So my question is, why set it at all?
Well,
why not simply determine how many New York bred, New York sired horses are in the money and allocate on a quarterly basis in arrears?
Well, we can't do that because we don't have any idea how many races there's going to be run or how many horses are going to run in that. And
to your point, we have restricted New York bred to pay on those things. Those can be, right? I'm sorry. So, in the two types of company that can be paid, open company bonus and then the restricted piece.
I think we need to clarify that. There's no difference in the amount of award we pay in an open race or a restricted race.
The breeders.
There is, right?
No, there is a difference. No, there's not.
Oh, so you pay in every open race?
Every open race.
Oh,
okay.
You pay an open race. You pay to everyone in the race?
Every New York bred that runs in an open race. Think of it this way. Any New York bred that runs in a race in New York State, anywhere in New York State, Finger Lakes, Aqueduct, Belmont, Saratoga, gets an award if he's first, second, or third, regardless of if the race is restricted or open. Now, we have other categories awards which pay bonuses when a New York bred leaves restricted company and goes into open company. Those are different. Those are owner's awards. They're germane to our whole budget process, but it's a different category, and it's generally a category which is not a high number. We don't generally pay out a lot of money in that. So the Breeder Award, and what we have to do is we have to look at it for what it was the year before. Number of races, approximate numbers of races that are won, and horses that earn money. And we set those levels based on historical knowledge from the past several years. We follow the trend, the same as we would in banking or any other financial kind of a situation.
Yeah, I appreciate your answer. The analogy doesn't work, though, because you are in complete control of your New York bred races, the number of them that you have, and then what you end up
with. No, we have no control.
No, they're set by the racetrack. So this is Jeff Canizzo from the New York Breeders. The variables we have are New York bred racing, which the fund has no control over. It's set by NYRA's race schedule and Finger Lakes' race schedule. The purse value is completely a variable we don't have control over. NYRA sets the purses, Finger Lakes sets the purses. The thing we do have control over is the award race that Joe described for the three different categories, and you can see them on this sheet here. There's Breeders' Awards, Stallion Awards, Owners' Awards. And those percentages are set by this board based on the financial outlay that we establish each year. But the actual distribution of the money you see, so the $10.4 million that goes to Breeders' Awards, that money is based on whatever the purse values were for the year and the quantity of races that were run by those racetracks. If that makes sense. And the results of how the horses did, which...
When do you know what the schedule is going to be? At what point in your fiscal year?
Never. Never. I mean, the racing is established based on overnights in the condition book that NYRA and Finger Lakes puts out, and then that racing actually fluctuates based on what horses get entered into those races. So there's no true way for the fund to know what next week's races are going to be for awards that we're going to need to distribute.
We're just catching up, so we apologize for being dense, but how many years are you in this, you know, deficit position? Is it frequent?
That deficit isn't really a deficit. We're showing that way, but we pay our awards based on the levels that we set, less a 10% holdback. The 10% holdback covers the shortfalls, if there are any, at the end of the year.
Right now.
Is that any help to you? Does that help you?
But I thought we started this conversation by saying the 10% holdback was inadequate for this year.
Okay, no.
I'm sorry, that must have been a misunderstanding. Our controller is going to want to say something.
Okay, now, even though we're showing a $445,000 loss for last year and a $95,000 loss for this year, that will be rectified in the month of December. So to address 2012, the money to erase that loss was pulled from this holdback reserve account. So ultimately, the stakeholders received 81 cents on the dollar in order to recover that loss. So at
the
end of
that.
So last fiscal year, you had the $400,000 thereabout deficit.
Mm-hmm. Right.
And you covered that by some portion of the 10% holdback.
Correct.
Exactly.
This is Bill.
Where's the 10% holdback? Where's the reserve account in the financials?
And
where is the reserve account in the financials?
Okay, well, we will get to that when we look at the balance sheet.
Okay, but would you let me cheat and just show me what the balance sheet is?
Sure, I'll do that. If you want to go to page
Yeah, I got it. Page 7 of 10?
No, page 9 of 10.
Page 9 of 10?
At the top left-hand corner, you'll see 10% breeder stallion owner, $1.5 million versus $1.3 million, for an increase of
$232,000. Right.
Do these accounts roll every year? So if you don't need this money, that rolls into your next fiscal year?
No.
Absolutely not. This $1.5 million is more than sufficient to either cover this $95,000 loss we have through November, or a projected $375,000 loss through December. So it's more than adequate to cover it if we go that way to handle it.
Right. And gentlemen, I want to make the other point that by statute, the fund cannot carry over a balance that exceeds $75,000. So every year we have to distribute all of our money.
So what happens? You pay out the $95,000 that you look like you're short. You have, let's call it $1.4 left in the account. Is that fair?
Yeah, for description here it is.
Yeah.
It's not actual numbers.
So what happens to the 1.4?
If we've got 1.4, we'll pay a bonus. We have to pay out all of our awards. We have to pay out all the money we take in. So we pay a supplemental award based on what horses or what breeders have done over the year.
Right. So instead of getting the 30%, they might get the 31% for the year, or whatever the formula actually calculates.
Okay, I think we're catching up. So basically what you're saying is that your reserve, in your experience, has always been adequate to cover your needs if you come up short.
Correct. Yeah. Except for this year and the year prior to this, that situation has not come into existence, from my awareness, in quite some time.
You had to tap the reserve to cover...
Right.
I would like to make a comment. Bill Wilmot, a breeder member. The only discretionary money that we have as a fund, really, is purse enrichment. And I'm probably stealing the comptroller's thunder. But that is our get even if we have to. So if the 10% doesn't cover it, if we come out short, we can dip into that purse enrichment, because that's discretionary money. We do not have to pay that money out. We do it to help the racetracks. But that's a second way of living up to what we promise. So we have the 10% holdback in last year, and this year there's going to be probably some dipping into the purse enrichment at the end of the year.
Mr. Chairman, I'm wondering, in light of some of the questions and so on, obviously some of our new members are not familiar, and I understand that, whether maybe it might be worthwhile for you to convene a meeting with the members that would want to attend, say with Jeff Canezzo, with our counselor, with Tracy, with any of the board members that might want to attend, and we could spend 3-4 hours explaining all of this stuff to people who were not familiar with the Breeders' Fund.
I think that's an excellent suggestion. Do I have that as a motion?
I'll make that motion.
Okay. Second?
I'll second it.
Okay. So we'll table this for the moment, and we'll have that meeting so we can be more grounded to make a decision. Okay?
Mr. Chairman, I have one question, if I might.
Yep.
In terms of the purse enrichment, Is that an amount of money that, when you create your initial budget, that you set aside at that time? Are those monies that are set aside?
Yes, the money is set aside, and then it's paid out during the year. This year we may change the practice. We may use some purse enrichment money to make the breeders whole, and then pay additional money in the new year to Finger Lakes. So it wouldn't accrue to this year, but would be fresh money for the year. Because if you read the minutes of the news,
yes.
We had assessed that there'd be a huge, huge increase, more than double, in purse enrichment for next year. But there's some thinking that we will tinker with that. We will, set a certain amount that will definitely go to the tracks. But we're going to set a reserve aside in purse enrichment, which is going to be our cushion should we run short, because we want to make the breeders whole.
That's what I thought I understood. Thank you.
Now, in tabling this discussion for our briefing meeting, is there anything that's going to interfere with
anything that you have to make a decision on in a timely manner or no?
Well, most of the issues we've got on the on our agenda today are going to require some explanation to the new members. It's really pretty complex when you look at it. It's confusing and it's complex. But some of the issues, we'll certainly try our best to bring you guys up to speed as we go along. And I know it's difficult. It's difficult for people who have been doing this for years and years, let alone just thrown into the fire today. So,
and Joe, we appreciate that. And Mr. Chairman, it's Todd. I would just observe, I think that the commissioners could catch up very quickly with a little explanation. And I'm sure you all appreciate handing us, you know, these financials and saying, you know, what do you think, without any background is virtually impossible for us. So we actually have no view at all whether these are good, accurate, or helpful financials. And if you guys can do business with us abstaining on issues like that, then we should go ahead and do that. And if we can't, then I think we have sort of a procedural problem.
Well, we have a quorum. And so we can transact business. Four of the members would need to abstain, which doesn't really impact the quorum. We would still be able to vote on these matters. So I don't think that it impairs the ability of the board to conduct its business. And I do think it's appropriate for you to abstain until you have a better handle on how this, because this is rather complex. And so I would think that would be the right move.
Okay.
Should we continue to present the financials?
I would say so, if we could do that in a concise manner, okay?
Yep.
Okay. This page one is a summary of the profit and loss.
Can you speak up, please?
Okay. And as I mentioned before, the increase in awards of $2.4 million is entirely volume-related, since the rates or the price of the awards has stayed the same. In terms of revenue being up $2.6 million, that's primarily the VLT Resorts World. That's offset by a decline in handle of $481,000. I would refer you to page one of the Word document. It shows a chart that talks about the decline in handle. Of the $481,000 decline, $330,000 relates to Naira. Naira decline of 8.5%. 68% of that is pure handle. The other decline is a concept of proration, whereby they are recovering money using this means. Any questions on revenue? No. Okay.
I just want to make a comment on the proration column, the second column. Mm-hmm. I believe that is a way of solving the overpayment situation which occurred. I don't know if the new commissioners are aware of that. There was an error made by Naira where they overpaid the breeding fund over a period of time and then discovered it. And at least part of the solution is they're holding some money back going forward. That's a very simple layman's explanation.
And the amount of the overpayment was what? 1.7? Okay.
Well, there's some issue there as to whether there really was an overpayment.
This is an administrative thing.
The administrative thing. I misspoke.
Meaning what?
Well, Trace, why don't you explain it?
For years, Naira paid the breeding fund based on bets that were made on New York races. And there's supposed to be something called proration that takes part in making those wagers. And that those states should consider their own laws, their own takeout rates, before they pay the money on to Naira. Apparently that didn't happen for many decades. And there came a point where someone made Naira aware of that alleged problem. And for years, the fund had placed what we think was justifiable reliance on Naira to make those payments to us correctly. So it went on for decades. However, Naira became the reconstituted or new Naira in September of 2008. So when they when they were made aware of this alleged overpayment, they sent us a notice saying that in the future they were going to tell us how much we were overpaid, but they weren't going back decades. They were going back only to the new worth of the new Naira to come up with this figure of $1.7 million. So that's still something that's being negotiated. The attorney that was dealing with our attorney on that issue was recently let go by Naira, and we've gotten no word on who the new attorney is. However, beginning in May of 2012, they believe, start applying the correct rates to the money that they were taking in. And that results in lower payments to us. And we ask for every time they pay us, can you give us an explanation of why we are getting less money? So they carve out the proration. So when we get our payments, Frucci Consulting look at it and determine so the board has full knowledge of what's going on. How much of that loss and handle payment from Naira is due to the drop in handle? How much is due to the proration issue?
Okay, so that's a 68%, 32% split right now.
Right, 68% is attributable to the decline in handle. 32% is attributable to the proration that they now impose on the money they pay us.
Okay, so moving on to the expenses. As far as the Breeders Awards, Stallion Owners, and Owner Awards, if you look to page 2 of the Word document, there's information for the first 5 periods to explain the $1.9 million increase from 2013 over 2012. The first chart is by track, and you can see of the $1.9 million, the Belmont track under the Breeders Award column is about 47% of that total increase. So in terms of knowing where is the money going, this is a view of how to understand that. Another view of how to understand why the awards are up is shown on the bottom of the page, and that's by type of race. And as you can see, some of the races increased, some of the races decreased. Again, netting down to the $1.9 million. And this kind of ties into the earlier discussion about knowing where the money's going. We can't know ahead of time because the mix changes. Any questions on the charts that describe the races? In terms of expenses?
You know, in terms of us being briefed later, when do we reset this budget or relook at it?
The budget was set for 2014 in September. However, we're going to be taking another look at it to amend it before the next board meeting.
Right.
Which is when, I'm sorry?
Usually in February.
Say it again?
Usually in the month of February.
February, okay.
Because we refile an amended budget the end of March.
Okay.
On page 3 of the Word document is a comparison of administrative expenses and promotional expenses. After first putting them on a consistent basis, because in 2013 there are different items than 2012. So, for example, for administrative expenses, after removing registry fee income, the expense is $606,000. That is $78,000 lower than 2012. The decline in administrative is shown in the detail below. For promotional, it goes the other way. $767,000 for promotional versus $658,000 for 2012, or an increase of $110,000. At the bottom of the page, that shows an overall net increase of about $31,000. However, what needs to be considered in terms of analyzing why the increase is there are also decreases. If you were to sum the payroll and professional fees for administrative and promotional, you'll see that that is a $51,000 decline. So if you have a $31,000 net increase and a $51,000 decline in one category, that's an overall increase of $82,000 in other areas. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
Any questions? Okay. Then I would refer you to page 7 of the 10-page document, which is the balance sheet. The top of the page is cash. In terms of control around cash, cash is reconciled monthly. Further, it is protected by a ZBA arrangement, which is a zero balance accounting, so that there's no exposure for overdraft. So those particular accounts that you see negative amounts, what that represents are checks that have been written, but they have been yet to be presented to the bank, so the master ZBA has yet to fund them. As soon as those outstanding checks clear, the master ZBA will fund and will net to zero. Any questions on the cash? On page 4 of the Word document are a couple of charts that also explain cash movement. You can see that cash for 2013 was $15 million versus $14 million the year before. That cash outlay was $756,000 higher.
Yeah, going back, I'm sorry, on the cash page, when you have current assets November 30th, 12th?
Yes.
$1.8 million, and this year you're at $2.7 million, basically.
Yes.
I see the numbers on a piece of paper. Is there a reason for that beyond?
Reason for which? The change from year to year?
Yeah.
The majority of the change is in the cash that's in the disbursement
account.
Yeah, it's about $720,000.
I'm not sure what the question is.
There's an increase of about $900,000.
Yes. We have higher revenues coming in, for one thing.
$2 million.
Yeah, the revenue is up $2.5 million for the year. 16% up.
Yeah, okay.
So the this is my assumption. I don't have an insight into the financials, but my assumption is that because resorts roll is up $3 million to the fund in revenue, that there's more cash on hand in those accounts.
So essentially the Rufino and Acquia.
Correct.
Yes.
Okay, on page 4, on the charts that show the payout for awards.
Page 4 of the Word document?
Page 4 of 4. Page 4 of the Word document. In 2012, we paid $14 million in awards. 2013, $15 million. That shows a $757,000 increase. And at this point, with all of the millions that we've been talking about with awards increasing, you could wonder, why is that only 757? Well, that's because in 2013 there was no supplemental payment because the prior year had a loss. So there was no supplemental payment, which depressed that number. Furthermore, the withholding that was paid out in March of this year had been reduced to 81% of the total to cover that loss of the prior year. So with those two factors to reduce 2013, it still is ahead, again, race related to the volume of the races. Okay. Any other questions on cash? Accounts receivable.
I think we have to wait until we understand the background.
All right, so you don't have to explain it now, but I think Commissioner Snyder brings up a good point. Relative to what you just said about what's going on, how does that square with the conversation about the reserve?
The reserve. Well, this cash that has been paid out on an award-by-award basis has been only 90% of what the award actually is. And how it squares with the prior conversation is, as you see this withholding for 2012 on the line of March 13th, 2013, that number is reduced. It's smaller by about $252,000 because it was required to cover the loss that came up in 2012.
So that $1 million, 1080, am I looking at the right thing?
That's the withholding that was paid out. That was the 81% of the total.
And that should have been higher by a couple hundred thousand?
Right.
Is March always the period you do it in?
When there's a loss, yes, because we want to get our audited financial statements by an outside firm before we compute to the penny what people will be getting back.
And am I correct that this is only the second year that the loss has ever occurred that anybody knows of?
I suspect that when New York City OTB was trying to undergo bankruptcy, that was before it came here. But I believe that they had a loss that year as well.
Yeah, you right.
would have. We had a loss.
Right. Okay. So I would say that this year would, and again, I've been around for 6 years, but I believe that this year will be the third time total in the last decade that this has happened.
And you attribute that to the projection that's done at the beginning of the year?
Partially, I think. I mean, we're going to go into the dialogue, but I think that item four, the purse enrichment dialogue, will.
And this is,
well.
I think, all this. Well, we'll finish this and we'll
go over it.
Because it's, as little as I know, it seems to be all interrelated.
The accounts receivable balance, we have an aging on page 10. Since that aging was put together, the items have been resolved, so there are no issues with our receivables. We go to page 8 of 10. Casey, can you walk through this Suffolk bankruptcy discussion?
Suffolk OTB has applied for bankruptcy protection, and the pre-petition amount that they owe us is about $130,000. The update for this month is that Suffolk OTB expects to be granted permission by court next year to pay us back 100%. However, the payback will be done over the course of possibly 3 to 5 years. And the reason they think they can return to profitability is they've cut costs and been given permission to build an addition that will house 350 or so machines, VLT machines. So they told me I couldn't take the liability off the books yet. You know, when we start to get the money coming in, that will be going down, but it will be over a period of years.
Okay. You can see at the bottom of page 8, the accounts payable, the money for the awards, owners, breeders, stallion, that represents for the month of November only. And again, comparing 2013 to 2012, that's an increase of $170,000. So the trend is holding that month by month, 2013 has greater awards than 2012. Page 9, top of the page, we've already discussed the holdback of $1.5 million. The only other comment I would make on this page is that the GASB 45 post-retirement benefit, that study has just been updated, so these are current numbers. It's not a three-year-old study now. That's been just recently updated. And that brings us back to net income, net loss of $95,000. Any questions?
Okay. I think as part of this discussion, we should talk about person enrichment, and that would give us a better sense of what the picture looks like, particularly in the short term, and some things that we have to make some determinations around between the next few months. I don't know if we're going to approve the financials without having the discussion of the person enhancement. Then we can go back to that.
Yep.
Since people are saying they're interrelated, they wouldn't want to make a vote on the financials and then saying we have a discussion on person enhancement. If I had known that before, I might have made a different determination. From what little I understand, and correct me if I'm wrong, 90% I am, that it's not going to hurt having this discussion and then going back to that. I don't see any harm that we can do. Okay? Jeff, can you walk us through the person
enhancement? Is that the man's going to do that? You're doing the person
enhancement,
right, Jeff?
Well,
we can all do it together. We can start with Jeff. Sorry.
I think first off, I want the new members to understand what purse enrichment is. Purse enrichment is a discretionary amount of money that the fund has. Discretionary in that it is set aside in the budget from owner's awards, breeder's awards, stallion awards, administrative expenses, and promotional fees. It's the only, and the Cornell Zweig Fund, it's the only part of the legislation which enables our presence where we don't have to give out that money every year. We don't have to give any purse enrichment. But we, over the last 30 years, we have regularly contributed to both racetracks for purse enrichment. Now, the two racetracks are Finger Lakes and MYRA. We have a in law, it says that if we're going to pay purse enrichment, we have to pay it on a 60-40 split. 60% of our total purse enrichment budget has to go to Finger Lakes, 40% has to go to NYRA. So that's just the background. The dilemma we're in right now, and I don't want to get ahead of you, is that NYRA doesn't need money, Finger Lakes does. So every dollar we give them, we've got to give them 4 cents to NYRA or 40 cents to NYRA, which really doesn't need it. But by to follow the law, we have to do that. So that's that complicates this issue a little bit. But we're working on it. So the purse enrichment, what we want to do for the future, because there's an issue going on this year, and I think I'll let Jeff, you've talked with the chairman this morning about that, Jeff. Did you guys cover that?
They're getting sued by a variety of people. Yes.
Okay. So my portion of this purse enrichment discussion should be about what we're going to do with it next year. Now, if you look in your minutes, you'll see that back in the September minutes, the audit committee estimated that we would have $3.4 million in purse enrichment for next year. Now, that was based on the study of how much money was coming in and where we thought we would be. That's probably higher than what it actually is going to be in 2014. But we have undertaken on the audit committee, which is composed of Jeff and John and myself, to change our way of doing that and treat it really as the discretionary money that it is. Whereas before, it was kind of like the racetracks just got it. We had no real accounting of what they did with it, other than per se, we didn't get at the beginning of the year, we didn't negotiate with them a deal where they said, okay, with your money at NYRA, you're going to fund how many stakes races and how much per race. We've never had that discussion in the past. Same thing at Finger Lakes. We give them $1.5 million a year. We've never had a discussion about what are you going to do with that $1.5 million a year. We think this was over the years. We think that it's outgrown its usefulness in that manner, and that we need to set up a committee to negotiate these amounts with the racetracks before we commit to how much purse money we're going to earn, enrichment money. I want to make sure that you understand it's enrichment money. Before the fiscal year, before we get into the year. So that's going to allow us to get a better picture of where the fund's money is going and how well it's working to promote thoroughbred breeding in New York State. So is there any questions on that so far?
Just a little clarification. I concur completely that there needs to be a negotiation, because the purse enrichment is purely discretionary, and that should give this body a great deal of leverage in the discussion.
That's right.
Is the 60-40 proration waivable by NYRA?
Unfortunately, it's not. It's in law. It says that if we give purse enrichment at all, we have to give it to both racetracks.
So the language of the statute is not discretionary. It is shall not. The way it actually reads is that if you're going to declare, if you're going to pay purse enrichment, you shall not pay less than 40% to either of the racing associations.
However, once in the past, they did waive it to help out breeders. In 2010, I believe it was, they had not yet been paid $400,000 of first enrichment, and they agreed in writing to allow the fund not to pay that as long as the money was used specifically to pay breeders who had been caught on the short end of the stick when New York City OTB was seeking bankruptcy.
Well, I don't really understand what you're saying. My understanding from the conversation only, I know nothing, yeah, is that the purse enrichment is discretionary. So why do I need their waiver to waive the discretionary purse enrichment?
They paid the Finger Lakes.
If you're going to pay, in other words, if you're going to pay any purse enrichment, then by statute you have to pay it to both racing associations. You don't have to pay any purse enrichment at all.
I understand, but I asked you if it was waivable, and Joe said no, but I hear somebody saying yes.
Well, it was waivable in a specific instance when they waived it.
It's not waivable, let me clarify that. The fund board cannot determine if it's waivable. We can't sit here and say, okay, we're going to pay Finger Lakes $100,000 this year, we're not going to pay Naira anything. The only way we can make it waivable is if we negotiate with the entity, Finger Lakes.
But we could go to Naira and say, listen, guys, we're considering a purse enrichment of X. If you guys will accept 20% this year, we'll make it 140% of X. But if you won't, we're going to 80% of X.
Exactly.
And they can make a discretionary waiver, if I understand this conversation correctly.
Exactly. Exactly. You have it completely. But the only point is that the fund board can't do that. We can't sit here and do that without negotiating with the entities that we're going to give that money to. It has
right.
to be
waivable
it has
them.
To be their waiver. They have to
right.
say to us, we don't want that money this year.
In other words, when we did waive it, sorry, Jeff, but we just want to clarify the point. The statute doesn't speak in terms of it being waivable. I just want to be clear about that. However, in the one circumstance where Naira did waive, it was a unique set of circumstances, and since the only entity that could have complained was Naira, we were comfortable taking that waiver. But it's not, I didn't view that as a precedent going forward that we were going to get waivers from Naira going forward. That was more or less a one-off situation.
Yeah. So there's, guys, this is Jeff Canizzo again. Just so you, I want to give you a clear understanding, there's two fundamental, I guess, flaws, per se, with the purse enrichment situation. One, that the statute reads that we have to distribute to both, and obviously, as we all know around this table, the need is not necessarily the same. Naira's purse account is significantly larger than what Finger Lakes' purse account is. The second fundamental flaw to this, and it's based on policy, is that how the fund distributes purse enrichment money, and this is what Barry and I were speaking about earlier, it's based on, we're making a predetermined decision to send them in the beginning first quarter of the fiscal year when we don't know what our fair grounds are at the end of the fiscal year in order to do so financially. So it might be worthwhile for the board to consider adopting a new policy in terms of paying purse enrichment that it doesn't happen in the beginning of the year, but perhaps happens at the end of the year, or whatever the terms may be throughout the course of the year, so that the fund has a fine financial position to, in order to, number one, which is our priority, pay the award, breeders' awards, and then two, pay this discretionary money if and so we're able to do so.
And
if that makes sense.
And I'll add to that that we have already entered into discussions with the horsemen at Finger Lakes, who we pay this money to, laying out this idea that we want to change from the idea of not knowing what we're paying, as we talked about before, and negotiate this thing, pay it either maybe biannually or at the end of the year, and treat it truly as what it is, discretionary money. So that's the background on the purse enrichment thing. It's a work in progress as far as what are we going to do with it next year. I'm going to ask the chairman later in the meeting to set up a committee to go to Finger Lakes and meet with the horsemen and get this thing worked out, and also to Naira. But it's moving along very well. I'll tell you, it's very positive.
Joe, one thing I'd like to add, Mr. Chairman. sounding like preaching to the choir over a long period of time that I've been on this board in two different instances, that it really rubs me the wrong way as a horse breeder in this state that we cannot and have not been able to get Finger Lakes to build a turf course. Turf course racing over the last 30 years has grown very significantly, number one in the United States, number two at NIRA, with Belmont and Aqueduct and at Saratoga. The problem from a breeder standpoint is if a horse isn't good enough to race at NIRA and proves they're not good enough, and a lot of horses can run on turf that can't run well at all on dirt, and not to have an alternative for those kinds of horses is really bad. And unfortunately, every time that's been raised with the Finger Lakes, we get no positive response because they don't want to spend the money, even though if they spent the money and had turf racing, I don't think there's much question that anybody knows anything about the breeding business, the horse business in this state, would say that it wouldn't increase their business considerably, which in turn would be much more profitable down the pike, but they don't want to spend the money initially. Now, it's not the horsemen's fault, because the horsemen themselves are very favorably inclined toward turf racing, but the company that owns Finger Lakes will not make the capital expenditure in order to build a turf course.
And you're absolutely right, Howard. I mean, that's one of the problems that's been involved in this thing forever. It's a different day right now as far as this money goes, the amount of money we could possibly send up there, and our initial discussions. And I don't want to put the cart before the horse here, so to speak. But our initial discussions have that on the agenda. That, as one of you fellows said, and I'm sorry I haven't got all your names right yet, but one of you said, we're in the bargaining position here. We're the ones that have got the money. We're the ones that have that discretionary money. And we have a heavy hand in how that money is going to get played out next year. So part of this discussion, this ongoing discussion that we've set up with management and the horsemen at Finger Lakes, involves that very subject of a turf course in exchange for more money, if you will. So we're working on it, but we don't have anything at this stage that we can say, yeah, we're going to move ahead with this. We're in the discussion stage of that. But you're absolutely right in your assessment that we're in the driver's seat on this thing now. As I said, it's a different day, and we feel that we can get some real movement on Howard's idea there. It's way beyond its time.
Barry, we're having a little technical difficulty here. If you could have people say who they are when they speak, well, it seems to have cleared up. The last 10 minutes or so, we were just getting a frozen picture.
Okay.
So we can't tell who's talking.
Can I see everybody?
Yes, you see in the lower right hand corner. That's the image that they see in the lower right hand corner.
How much for the turf course cost at Finger Lakes?
Okay.
Can you say that again? I don't think we heard you.
How much would a turf course cost at Finger Lakes?
We haven't really gotten that far into it. They've done some studies on it, but we have not really delved into the financials of what it will cost.
What would you guess?
I'm going to guess it would cost around $4 to $5 million.
I would guess. I'd agree with that.
Less than 10.
Less than 10.
Mm-hmm. This Finger Lakes, the way it's set up, you could probably put the turf course on the inside and just... You know, really, they don't use it. So few people go to live racing there. They watch it. Even if they're at the track, they watch it inside. They could, you know, trim back the proceedings. So it wouldn't be as horribly expensive as it might be at some other tracks.
No, I don't know. I don't know how this body would approach Finger Lakes to have that conversation. But if it were me, I would go to them, it's Todd Snyder speaking, I would go to them and I would say, you guys have made a management decision year after year not to build a turf course. I assume you have an analysis that supports that judgment. We'd like to see it.
That's a good idea, and I'm sure that's going to come up in the ongoing discussions with them.
Mr. Chair, if I could.
John
Graziano. Just to kind of bring us back to where we started with respect to Purse Enrichment, I think it's important that everyone understand how we get to that Purse Enrichment number, which is when we put together a budget, we do the awards based on what they've been historically, what we want to pay out, what we anticipate, and whatever's left is what we kind of allocate toward Purse Enrichment. So I think that the conversation really here is today is we have a problem where we're either going to have to cut back on the holdback for the breeders, or we can take some of that money from Purse Enrichment. And what's obvious is we got to decide on that today, number one. But number two, our 2014 budget was built the same way our 2013 budget was built, which has a huge structural problem, which we need to address. So before we can go to Finger Lakes or Naira or anybody else, we need to readjust our budget and see what we really believe that Purse Enrichment number is going to be.
Absolutely.
Because it's not going to be $3.4 million.
Absolutely.
So I think we need to get back into, number one, what are we going to do? Who are we going to hold the money from, the tracks or the breeders, is the first question. And then the second question is, moving forward, how quickly can we actually put together a budget for 2014 we're more comfortable with? If we wait until February or March when we have another meeting, we're already a quarter into this, we're already hurt.
That's happened, Jay.
Okay. So
let's deal with the first order issue. 2013, is there a relationship between Finger Lakes, Purse Enhancement, and trying to address the breeders' issues at the same time and dealing with the time around things?
There is. We've been talking with some people at the Finger Lakes. Some various board members have been speaking with, and myself, with the head of Horseman's Group out there, Chris Regal. And they would like us to make the payments now, although I spoke with Dave Brown, head of the Horseman's Group, yesterday, and he said that they would be fine if we increase our payment.
They would be fine with what?
With us paying in the new year an increased amount to cover the last portion of the payment. So the payment that we make to the Finger Lakes isn't actually $1.5 million, it's 60% of $1.5 million, or $800,000. So they want that last piece of roughly $250,000 or so. So they said that they would be fine if we wait until the new year. That way, by reversing the expense for the Purse Enrichment this year, we have money to pay back. We think it'll be close, but we think we'll have the money to pay back all the money that we've withheld from owner, stallion, and breeder awards.
And that withhold amount is what? It's I just don't recall.
1.45 million.
10%.
So, what, Tracy, of the 10% we're holding back from the breeders, what would this 250% or $250,000 fee be? What percentage of that 10%?
Well, that would be. Christine, can you do the math on that?
Would it be 90% of the 10%, or is it?
Well, it's 250 divided by 1.475. Let me try that. $16.9%
of the 10%. So you'd be paying out 84% of the 10% holdback, which is
Without basically.
And then the $250,000 represents the exact fourth quarter, almost, Purse Enrichment, correct?
Just for the Finger Lakes.
Right.
So the holdback loss would end up being 6%, what you're saying?
16. Well, it'd be a little more than that, because what we didn't compute right now was the payment we also would have to make for Naira. So,
but what portion of the overall 100% that you would start off the year with anticipating, or would you end up with?
Excuse me. Yes.
Well, since we don't have December in, we know how much we really need.
I was just trying to get a rough idea of how much we're...
Okay. So it, what you're saying is if we don't reduce the purse...
In other words, if we paid out, you're asking if we paid out the first enrichment, how much on the dollar will we be able to pay out to the award earners? Last year we paid out 81%.
Okay, well, if we defer the fourth quarter payment for the purse until next year, reduce the expense this year, maybe it's a wash and maybe 100%. Because if you're telling me to reverse expense, then that... You know,
right, that takes care of it.
That should take care of it.
But, for example, if we do that, the payment of Finger Lakes cannot be accruable for this year. It has to be looked at as an increase in our payment to them for next year.
Right, right.
Mr. Chair, I just want to, where I'm coming from, I'm just going to lay my cards on the table, is I think it would be very, very bad for this fund not to pay 100% to the breeders after not making that last year. So the question is, we obviously, you know, the Finger Lakes and Naira, you know, we budgeted money for them. They may have, you know, but in all honesty, I think for this fund, for perception of this fund and the integrity of this fund, we have to pay the breeders the 100%.
So if we work out this arrangement with Finger Lakes, where does that leave the breeders? Does that leave them whole,
that
or short, or
whole?
Whole
or very close to whole.
Okay.
But what about the Naira money? We just wouldn't pay them at all then, and that would be it.
Well, we wouldn't pay anybody.
Yeah, we wouldn't pay anybody, and we promised to play Finger Lakes next year, but it'd be new money.
Yes.
Correct. 2014.
But would we also pay Naira their comparable share, too?
Yes.
Okay.
Next year. What is the purse amount, that total purse amount, would be paid in 2013 then if we didn't pay this last payment?
The last payment, which is on the books at $250,000, you subtract the $250,000 off this $1.375 million.
So we paid $1.1 million in purse enrichment already.
And that was what last year?
This year.
1.1 this year,
right.
As opposed to the 1.3 or something to that.
Right. The year before.
That compares to what for 2012?
1.5 in 2012. Okay.
Hey, are we doing an executive session here today?
Pardon me?
Yes.
Are we doing an executive session here?
Yes, we have some personnel matters that we clearly have to go to executive session on.
So $250,000, is that Finger Lakes and Naira's stake?
That's the combination.
Yes.
That is the combination.
I thought it was Naira's, are you sure? I think Finger Lakes is $250,000.
For 2 months' worth of accrual, it's $250,000.
For both tracks?
For both.
Okay.
Right.
Do we have a motion on how we want the fund to proceed in their discussions with Finger Lakes?
I'd make the motion that we should continue the dialogue with Finger Lakes concerning purse enrichment with an emphasis on getting an accounting from their procedures up there of what they're doing with our money. I would like to see that for 2013, and going forward, I think it's absolutely mandatory.
And what about the $250,000 or thereabouts in purse enhancements for the rest of the year? Do we want them to proceed in that negotiation?
I know from talking to them, they want to make sure that the enhanced payments for 2014 will include this $227,000 or whatever the amount is that we would have paid them.
Yeah. Mr. Chairman, if I could, I think it would be more appropriate to make a motion to make the breeders whole and then have a negotiation with them. You know, because we still may have some purse enrichment money after we make the breeders whole this year that we can pay out, and then we'll be able to determine what that money is, and that can become subject to the negotiation. Because if we make a motion to go negotiate with them, it doesn't give us the ability to do it. The ultimate goal here is to pay the breeders. So once we pay the breeders, we have the audit, we know how much money, 2013 money we can pay out. Whatever committee you put together to do that negotiation can start those conversations immediately, but with the clear understanding that there's no money, you know, there's not going to be all the money. Otherwise, you know, we don't owe it to them. So there's no reason to go in there not in a position of strength.
Very good.
Mr. Chairman, can I just add a thought? It's Todd. We're obviously going to abstain in this whole thing, but I'd just like to make one observation. If in going into a conversation with Finger Lakes or Naira or any of the tracks, any of the operators, I would not necessarily want to hear that this board had made a discretionary payment into some sort of obligatory payment. So I wouldn't want to hear that we had said, oh, yes, don't worry, next year we promise to do anything, catch you up, not catch you up. This is a discretionary payment, and I don't want to be, unless someone explains to me why it's becoming non-discretionary, I don't want to make it non-discretionary. Am I missing something? Joe, you're trying to set a new negotiating standard. I completely agree with the direction of your comments. I wouldn't want to set up that negotiation by saying, oh, yes, but don't worry, you have enough leverage to make me commit to doing something next year on this 250.
No, on the 250 and on all the negotiations going forward, the first premise has been that we need to see an accounting from Finger Lakes of what they're doing with our money. Last year and this year.
But there's an attitude that I'm hearing coming in the conversation. Maybe it's appropriate, but there's a tone that somehow this 250, we are obligated to pay the 250. But I'm told repeatedly it's a discretionary disbursement. So we'll either pay it or we won't. Well, I'm not sure why we would say, oh, if we don't pay you this year, don't worry, we'll pay you next year.
But I think it's fair to mention that in the discussions the last few days with the horsemen at the Finger Lakes, they say, well, you promised us you were going to pay us this much throughout the year, and now here it is the end of the year, and they're going to have to borrow from Delaware North to pay their last person.
Is there evidence of that promise somewhere?
Well, we budgeted the money.
Is there a promissory note? Is there a binding decision that made it obligatory to make the payments?
Legally, no. I don't believe so. But we budgeted the money, and they budgeted their races based on the anticipation of that money.
But there's nothing in writing.
There's no legal obligation.
Which races?
Well, that gets to Joe's point, is we want to see an accounting.
We want to see an accounting of it.
Okay.
And
can they provide it?
No. We haven't been provided that yet. But we haven't had a formal discussion with them. I mean, several board members.
Have we asked them, and their response is what? Oh, yeah.
I discussed this with the head of the Horsemen's Association yesterday, informally, and told him that was one of the things that the fund board really needed going forward in this thing, both to look at last year's this supposed underpayment or whatever we have here, whatever you want to call it, and for going forward. We want to see where the money's going and where it went last year. So I didn't get any opposition to that at all. They said that they'd be glad to supply that accounting to the fund. So I don't think we're going to have a problem with that, but and Tracy, maybe you can tell me about your discussions with them of that.
Well, Dave Brown and I called on a Friday afternoon. He called me from Mexico, and he said that they can borrow money from Delaware North to cover the shortfall, but he was, you know, very angry about not getting the last payment and saying he doesn't want pie-in-the-sky promises. He wants, if we're going to tell them that he's going to get X amount of dollars, he wants to be able to budget that. And they do at the Finger Lakes, where every single race they run, if they put New York Breeding Fund money onto the race, they show where it is on the line. They've got an accounting of that.
So, does that answer your question?
Well, not really. I understand what you're saying. Let me just make my point of view, which is uninformed, and that's why I'm abstaining, but let me just make my point of view going in clear. If we make a budget at the beginning of the year, and at the end of the year someone's going to say, but you promised, then the budget has to be set much more conservatively, because you are converting a discretionary disbursement into an obligatory disbursement, and that seems wholly inappropriate to me.
And that's why we want to have, you're right, you're absolutely right, and that's why we want to change this. Some of, you know, this has been a, this was the system that we inherited from previous administrations, it's something that we've recognized this year as a real problem and that it needs to be addressed. So that's, I'm in total agreement with you.
Okay, thanks.
Mr. Chairman, just a comment on Todd's thing. I also agree. I think the rub is the transition. They're used to this payment and have come to expect it. And in fact, they do struggle somewhat. And so we don't want to leave them high and dry, but we want to change our procedures and go to best practices. And therein lies the rub. We'd like to not let them down, but we'd like to do best practices also. And in the transition year, that's the rub. So probably unofficially, what we'd like to do is not promise, but hopefully be able to scrape together some money, because we are going to, in reality, give them some money next year with a better accounting. And with NYRA, it doesn't matter. They just do what they're going to do. I think in the best possible world, we would do what you say, which is saying, no more this year. We can't promise you next year, but we're going to look into it and try to improve our practices, and probably you'll get something. I mean, that in the real world, that's what I like to tell them in a business negotiation.
You know, from my point of view, I don't know the history, so I accept that everyone found it the way it is. How that conversation wouldn't be memorialized on the behalf of the track seems difficult to fully understand. You're giving them money in exchange for X. If they won't tell you what X is, the very simple solution is withhold the money. And until they tell you, that would, to me, would be a perfectly reasonable response. If it goes into a black hole, well, that's fine. It's a very simple solution. Don't make it go in a black hole. I don't know why, from a board perspective, this is my first meeting, so I'm learning some new things here. But, I mean, I would vote no to amending anything at this point until we know what we're doing, right? I mean, we were assigned to this board. I think we should give it the best foot forward. If we don't understand what it is, no. That's a simple answer. One man's opinion, Mr. Chairman.
So we had a motion. I don't know which one it was.
I'm not sure if it's
defined. I think we backed up and decided we needed to make out that John said we needed to have a motion to make the readers whole.
Well, first we're talking about the budget, and that's why I didn't want to resolve the financials, because this is a significant part of that, particularly as we go from November to January.
Well, then I will withdraw the motion that I started to put up 5 minutes ago, and I would like to make the motion that the fund endeavor to pay the breeders at the highest level that they can. And that includes using the holdback money for them. But I would say the motion would just be that the fund endeavor to pay the awards at the advertised rate.
Right. For
2013.
You just said use the holdback money, and there is some values, but did you also mean use the enrichment money?
The enrichment and holdback money.
I think it's simpler than that, that the fund utilize all resources available to them in 2013 to pay full withholding or to the utmost
the advertised rate.
Consistent with prudent management. Just give yourself a fiduciary out, consistent with prudent management.
Thank you. Thank you very much.
Get there. Okay. Do we have a second discussion?
Second. John, second.
Any discussion?
No. Mr. Chairman, I'm abstaining.
I'm assuming that for all of these, as we entered into this discussion, the four of us are abstaining from voting, correct?
Agreed.
Yeah, and beyond abstaining, if I understood a little bit more of the circumstances, you know, the procedure that we're dealing with here seems problematic from my point of view, because there are some things I think need to know, and I'm sure most of it's my own naivete about dealing with this stuff and not having seen it before, but there does seem to be some issues here that I don't fully understand how they exist, and I don't understand how we can be in some of these positions that we're in. Again, it's probably my fault, but until I'm comfortable, I'm not only abstaining, I would generally vote no, but I guess for this instance, we'll abstain. But I think that the conversations seem to be all over the place. I'm not seeing a lot of stuff in writing, and I think that that's a problem when you're talking about the level of cash that's going on here.
Correct. Okay. We have a vote. All those in favor?
Aye.
All those against? And we have the four abstentions that you can make note of that.
Now we'll go back to the finance.
Yep. Do we have a motion for the financial statement?
I would make a motion to accept the financial statements as presented.
Second.
Discussion? All those in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Negatives? And the four abstentions, if you can look at that. Okay, the next item on the agenda, and I may need a little help in walking through, is the Breeder Awards Revenue Cap. By statute, the fund is authorized to dispose and distribute the monies received in accordance with distribution schedules promulgated and adopted in rules and regulations of the fund board. Such schedules are required to be developed and based on reasonable estimates of fund income for the fiscal year of the fund and made available prior to January 1st of each year. We want to have a discussion of the fund cap. I think this is something that is normal course of business, but I think if we can do that concisely for the benefit of us newcomers, that someone could walk us through.
Well, initially, filed not the statute.
Okay. Yeah, and there is an issue that I want to raise as well. So the way the statute reads is that an amount shall be determined by the fund, but not in excess of 43% of total revenue to pay breeders' awards each year. I'm paraphrasing. There's also a provision, a subset of that same provision provides that except during any calendar year when the total percentage of breeder awards exceeds 43% of total fund revenue, then if two-thirds of the board agrees, a supermajority, then that breeder amount can go up to a higher cap, to a higher level. And in prior years, that cap had been 65%. And the law was changed just recently, okay? Well, it was the 2010 law that has a sunset provision. And so the sunset occurred in this calendar year. So, and the sunset provision changes that capped amount from 65% to 50%. Okay? So this is something that, which what's that?
We changed that law, yeah.
So we can raise it to
65% now. Okay, all right, so it was changed again, and I'm sorry. So the law now is at 65% cap, okay? And so if two-thirds of the board, notwithstanding the abstentions, approves this, then the breeder's cap can go up to 65%.
Yeah, that's
good. I would like to, Bill Wilmot, like to make one comment on this, and... We just left a murky area and one that needs cleaning up, clearly.
That's a no vote. Two-thirds is an affirmation, right? You have to get to...
Sorry, go
ahead. Anyway, the reason the 65% is important is, you know, this statute happened a long time ago, and again, nobody really knew how this was going to all work out. The owner's awards were added later. But what's happened is our biggest pay is by far breeders' awards. That's really where the responsibility comes in, and that's why this happens. It's not some sort of special treatment. It's been the way the business has gone, and it's a breeding fund, and that's kind of how it's happened. So it's a pretty non-argumentative thing. I think the Finger Lakes stuff before and kind of the sloppy way we've handled the enrichment, you guys made great comments. This is really a more cut-and-dry deal. That just wanted to... give you a sort of a man-to-man thought on it.
Yeah, and the gist of it is that the breeding program in New York State has come light years to where it was 40 years ago. So breeders are, number one, breeding more horses. They're racing more frequently in New York State, hence they're earning more awards. And if we didn't raise the ceiling from 50% to 65% for the awards, we wouldn't be able to pay everything that was earned to them based on how their foals did. And that's the crux of why this has changed and evolved. And this is a law that's been changed by the NYTV, my organization, for the last 3 years. And it's done so primarily and solely to keep breeders funded and the rates that they are earning on the racetrack.
I just want to point out, if you look at your financials on page one, we have the statutory cap on the left. And then when you get to Breeders Awards, you can see where we're running against that cap. There is 58.61% at the end of November of our revenue has gone to Breeders Awards. So by the end of the year, we might not reach the 65% cap that we're asking to be raised to. But in December, it's conceivable that we could, you know, go up to 60% or something like that.
And that's a good thing, because our job here is to pay awards to breeders. And the breeding industry is growing, and this is one of the measures that we use in our audits to show that. So it's a very good thing that we're doing that, and that we're able to show it, you know, memorialize it here at the meeting.
Mr. Chairman, Joe is absolutely correct, and it's very interesting. We are the envy, we being New York State, of every breeders organization in the United States. And a lot of them are trying to copycat it, because for the industry to grow, the bottom line is what we do with the Breeders' Fund is distribute money. I mean, that's for get more people to invest money in the horse business and so on. I'm Howard Noam, by the way. I think that the more we can do to attract new breeders, new people into the business, it's a big industry that's getting bigger and bigger. And the rest of the country is looking at us, again, I say, with envy. Anyway.
Any more discussion?
Mr. Chairman, could you just clarify for us over here what's actually before the board? I'm not clear. Is it that the board is looking to vote on whether or not by two-thirds majority of those voting that it wants to raise the cap?
Yes.
Is that what the statute says?
Yes.
The statute says two-thirds of those voting. Is that what the statute says?
Yes.
Two-thirds of, I'll tell you exactly.
I heard five people say yes. All of you have read the statute?
It's two-thirds vote of its board. By two-thirds vote of its board.
So it's not two-thirds of those voting?
No. No, it's two-thirds votes of its board, yes.
Okay, so then what happens with four of us abstaining?
Well, to the extent that you're abstaining, my understanding is that would mean that six people are seven. We have six voters, so we need four votes.
I'm sorry. Read me the statute again.
It's the absolute number.
It says by two-thirds vote of its board.
I'm not sure your interpretation is a fair statutory construction.
The purpose of a quorum is to transact business. We have a quorum to transact business, and the fact that you are abstaining, that's a fair point. I don't know the answer to that, to be honest with you. I'd have to look.
If I could, and you guys can debate the legal aspect of this, but I don't see where you as new board members would have any reason to abstain on this particular vote. This is a vote. This is to give us the ability to do something that the legislature has passed legislation allowing us to do, first of all, and the governor signed. So I don't see where, understanding that this is the way we have to do it, we're already in violation, that why you would abstain. I don't understand what your grounds for abstention would be.
What are we in violation of? I'm sorry, we're in violation of something?
Right now, we've already paid out 50%, 58% to breeders through November. So in order for us to make our last payment to the breeders, we have to take this vote as a board, which the legislature and the governor gave us permission and the authority to do, because they understand. They keep doing this, you know, law every couple years.
So we got to the 58% before we had the 65% authorization.
That's correct.
Well, yes, yes and no.
But
because
there's a month
it sunsets
left.
In the middle of the year. That's why.
It sunsets, what do you mean the middle? In June?
Actually, it sunset on the opening of Aqueducts Racino in 2012, which happened on October 31st.
I see.
So, and it continues on that
day. So up until year. October, you had the offer.
Correct. So the law allows.
And this is the first meeting since the authorization expiring that the board's gotten together.
That's right.
And it's been able to convene.
That's right. And if we don't approve this, so that means that the breeders will not get their money. Let's be very, that's the gist of this.
So up and through October, we're not in violation of anything.
Correct.
Okay. But this takes us through the list.
Next October 20th.
Yeah, that's right. Okay. And how many votes do we need?
We would need seven. Seven out of ten. I stand corrected. It does say two-thirds of its board. That's my fault. Seven votes would be needed in order to.
Okay, and we have a full complement of board members here.
Yeah, we're missing one.
Seven out of the ten. We haven't had a full complement of the board in 10, 15 years. So
we've got seven here and three in New York, correct?
Yes.
And one
not here.
Yeah, one not. I'm just wondering. Yeah. My question is just who's here?
Right.
So what's two thirds of 11?
Yeah.
Christine, what's two thirds of 11?
Your computer.
It's never been a split vote before. I could tell you that this particular provision has never had. They split
vote. This is basically a housekeeping
more
measure.
A question, I think it's more of a question than a dissent. Because nobody's voting against people.
What's two-thirds of 11?
I very much appreciate everyone's concern for what they would do if put in my shoes. And I appreciate that. But the reality is, I'm just uncomfortable with the way this has been presented. I'm sure historically you're correct. I have no doubt to doubt you or to not believe you. It just seems to me that if this was so important to be done now, it would have been given to me or explained to me in a way that could make me more comfortable. I don't think my standards or thresholds are that high. I appreciate your concern and thought process. I guess if it was an issue, you should have done it at the meeting when I wasn't at it. We were appointed not that long ago, 30 days ago. And you could have done anything you needed to clean up then. By virtue of the governor putting me on here, I assume that they want me to act in what I believe is my best judgment, and that's what I'm doing.
With all due respect to what you just said, we scheduled two meetings since last September. They were canceled on short notice because of, I don't know, reasons beyond our control. We had this on as an agenda item early on in the fall. We tried twice to bring this up because we knew that we had to deal with this by the end of the year. I mean, it's really unfortunate for you, and I understand your situation there, but we also got a fiduciary responsibility to the board and to the breeders of the state of New York to act on this measure. So it's really, it's not that we didn't try to bring this up. We didn't just hatch this week ago and said, we're going to bring it on because the new guys are here and they won't know what it's about. Believe me, there's nothing draconian at all about it. This is simply a measure, a housekeeping measure, which we have to do in order to pay out our awards.
We've done it 4 years.
And we've done it 4 years in a row. I feel terrible that all those meetings were canceled. There was a lot of things we wanted to get done in those meetings. But things as they are, the appointments process, the timetable of those things really put serious constraints on us for doing business. And we brought this up, we've been bringing it up for over a year. So if you're frustrated by it today, imagine how we're frustrated of having dealt with this situation for over a year.
What do we need?
So that's
This would be detrimental to the New York Breeders.
Yes, extremely detrimental.
Okay, so Joe, it's Todd. I actually appreciate your frustration. I want to just make a couple of clarifying points. One is, we sitting around this table are not, as you said, I think you were being casual, we're not actually fiduciaries for the breeders. Is that correct?
I
assure you, I am not a fiduciary for the breeders.
I think what Joe means is that by virtue of sitting as a board member, you know, you're sort of entrusted to act in the best interest of the breeding fund.
Of the fund, agreed. I agree with that. Okay, so if it is in the best interest of the fund, as Joe has said and others, that we take this action, then it seems to me there are a number of background clarifications that could be made that might put the four new members in a position where they could be more comfortable. A lot of assertions have been made about why this is so important. I think we simply need some background rather than these statements about the importance. I think we need to just have a little clarification and a presentation from somebody as to what the obligation of the fund is, what the constituting documents say about the fund's obligation to distribute funds to the breeders, and what the statute really says and what the background to the statute is. I think that would help a lot. It's not asking too much, I don't think.
No. Can someone briefly do that?
It can't be done briefly, but we will take the time to do it, okay? So it needs to be done, so we'll take whatever time.
I'm going to be appropriate for the session that you're going to have to educate.
Yeah, but we need to do this now.
Yeah, but this has to happen.
This has to happen.
There are a number of things that need to be dealt with in the briefing session. I clearly have the impression that this is something that is more urgent than that.
Yes.
Absolutely. So since it is, and since historically it might have been something that's been dealt with, somebody mentioned in a clerical matter.
Yeah, it's almost like.
And it might be that, but I don't think there are few of us who are informed enough to necessarily appreciate it.
Right.
That's all. So if somebody could concisely better inform us, and then we can hopefully move this along.
Well, I can get the ball rolling. The breeding fund was developed in 1973 by the state legislature. When it created this body for the purpose of encouraging interest in agricultural pursuits generally throughout New York State, and in order to incentivize really people to raise thoroughbred horses, because the raising of thoroughbred horses throws off a significant amount of money to the agricultural pursuits generally throughout the state. And I think the decision of the state legislature at the time was that if we could create a breeding fund that is going to incentivize breeding farms and ownership of horses and stallion owners to raise their horses and to have flourishing breeding farms throughout the state, that there will be collateral benefits throughout the state. I think that was kind of the initial wisdom of the breeding fund, and that wisdom has pretty much carried through. The breeding fund puts out an annual report every year that demonstrates very specifically the types of benefits that New York State, and really the upstate region in particular, receives and generates from the breeding fund and all of the activities associated with breeding. So,
can I just interrupt you for 1 second, please, Kyle? In 1973, the agricultural industry in New York State was in difficulty, principally because dairy farms were going out of business right and left. The farms essentially, a lot of them were going bankrupt. They were going off the tax rolls because the farmers couldn't pay the taxes and so on. So the legislature at that time, in its wisdom, I wasn't a member at that time. I first got elected in 1974 to the Senate. In 73, they decided to create essentially a new industry, i.e., the New York breeding horse industry. Now, there were some farms in New York at that time who were devoted to breeding horses. However, not a lot of farms. What happened after 1973, this fund, after it was created, encouraged a lot of people to go out and buy farms that were either in foreclosure, in bankruptcy, and so on. And essentially, we created a new major agricultural industry in this state. And since 1973, the industry has grown. It's had its ups and downs, because obviously the horse industry is follows with very closely to the general economy of not only the state, but the country. When business is good throughout the country, the horse business gets better. When it's down, it gets worse. But we still, if you look at the number of horse farms in 1973 in existence to the number now, it's several times more farms are active and in the agricultural industry. The thing that is so important to make sure we pass the motion that was made, you're going to have literally hundreds of New York breeders become very upset with the Breeders' Fund if we don't fulfill what had been a promise, essentially, to pay these breeders' awards. So that is why it's so important that we pass this particular measure that's been proposed here in this room. And I'm sorry that some of the new members really haven't had a chance to get up to speed, and I understand that. And you're all intelligent people. Mr. Crotty comes from a long history of people involved in public life. The commissioner, the former head of the criminal justice system in New York State, has a long history of being a great public servant, and I'm sure understands the significance of what we're trying to do here. And this has always been a housekeeping kind of measure. It's not something that is going to change. I think anybody who looks and gets familiar with this business is going to see it as a housekeeping kind of measure. The legislature and the governor changed the award system to be able to take up to 65%. And I think it's not only important, but I think it's essential that we pass this motion that was just made. Excuse me for interrupting you, Kyle.
Norm, it's Todd. That's actually very helpful background. I'm sorry, Howard. It's not Norm, I'm sorry. I got the wrong name?
Howard. Yes,
Howard, forgive me, Howard. Apologies, Howard.
Senator.
Mr. Senator, sorry. but it's very helpful background, and I appreciate it. A couple of just basic mechanical questions. Is my understanding correct that the Breeders' Awards, if the reserve was released, would exceed whatever your current threshold is? Is that correct?
No.
Without voting?
It already has. It's already.
So the answer is yes, right? Yes.
Yes, and yes in the fact that we've already sent out 58% for the fund.
I'm just trying to get a record, yes, on which the three of us would feel comfortable. So the answer is yes, right?
Correct.
Okay. And we're only acting with respect to 2013. Is that correct?
Correct.
And going forward 2014, we're going to have a much more substantial discussion about how we're going to conduct this business?
Correct. Yeah. I think that the whole budget process, based on today's dialogue, needs an evaluation that you guys certainly are going to be a part of.
And all of you who have greater history here than we four believe that this is consistent with past practice and necessary so that we don't upset the apple cart. Is that correct?
Yeah. Absolutely correct.
So on that basis, I'm looking at my colleagues here, Mr. Chairman. You're in the room, so I'll just speak for the three of us here. You know, we don't want to obstruct progress.
Right.
To the extent it's consistent with past practice and is applicable only to 2013, and the minutes reflect a little bit of this colloquy that we're having right now, then we won't stand in the way of it.
Okay. Do we have a motion?
The motion is to go to the maximum, raise the cap to the 65%
up
for four breeders awards.
Second.
For 2013.
Those
in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Aye. Get votes here.
Okay.
So basically, we can finish up our year's business.
Housekeeping business is more complex than some people know. We've been doing this for 20 years. Well, what is it? Well, I don't know, but we've been doing it for 20 years. Explain it to me.
Well, our next item, Mike,
is the audit committee is going to do a briefing overview of where we are on the controller search.
Right. I promise this will be very straightforward. The fund has been without a controller for a year and a half. We've been without a controller. We've interviewed people. We finally got permission from the powers that be to interview people and to advertise for the job. We started doing that in July. John and Jeff and myself interviewed four different people. We finally have found someone who has accepted to take the job, who has agreed to take the job. Their name has been passed along to the appointment secretary in the governor's office. The governor's office has said that they're acting with all expediency to approve that, and that's my report. We expect to have this done, closed, at the first of the year. That's my report.
And then we have a series of, well, not a series, but we have a few other personnel matters that we want to discuss, but I think that's better served if we do that in an executive session with the board. And what staff do we need to keep it? I've got to do it. The open meeting law affords New York Public Offices Law the ability of a public body to enter into executive session for limited purposes of discussing the medical, financial, credit, or employment history of any person or corporation or matters leading to the appointment, employment, promotion, demotion, discipline, suspension, dismissal, or removal of any person or corporation. Consistent with these, with the exception, I would like the motion to enter into executive session to discuss the employment history of particular persons. Do I have a motion?
So moved.
Second?
Second.
Okay, we need to go into executive session. I don't think this will take long at all. What staff do you're going to stay with us, correct? And I think that will be it for the moment, correct? Yeah. Thank you.
I don't know.